can't think of anything better than sitting down with someone who's going to challenge my thinking about ideas, make me rethink some things that I've taken for granted in the past and assumptions I've made that may be ill-founded. And I think that's the sort of, that's what I call professional conversation.
So when you go to conferences and listen to keynote speakers and workshop presenters, are you looking for a cold shower or a warm bath? That's the kind of interesting question that we're asking this week on our Modern Learners podcast, number 31. I'm Will Richardson, one of your hosts, and that was my good friend Bruce Dixon a little earlier there, talking about a post that he wrote on our modernlearners.com site that goes into the whole idea of what we should expect from the professional conversations we have, both at conferences and in our schools and in our communities. Really glad you could join us today. If you like what you're hearing on our podcast, please head over to iTunes and give us a bit of a review. And don't forget to sign up for the Modern Letters newsletter and also check out change.school, our long-term lifetime professional development that we're entering our fourth cohort in January, and also changeleaders.community, where we have hundreds of leaders from around the world who are talking about things that matter when it comes to education and learning and what change looks like in classrooms. But for now, thanks for joining us. Enjoy this podcast and hope to see you soon online. So how are you?
I'm good. Very good. Coming into my summer, coming to the end of the year, and I guess...
You know, I just before we get started, I had this memory just then of being down in Melbourne around Christmas time once, yep, a few years ago. It's really weird to see Santa in the middle of a 90 degree day. I just want you to know, it's very strange.
Isn't it funny? Because we work so much across the globe, across different time zones and different seasons, that sometimes you can adjust. Like obviously the mid seasons are okay. So fall, our autumn and spring, that works okay because the temperature's okay. But you're right, Christmas is the one that really shatters. And so it was a big deal for me a few years ago for the first time to actually have Christmas in the snow in New York with my daughter.
Yeah. I mean, do Australians have like different Christmas songs, like "And May All Your Christmases Be Hot" or something like that? I mean, is it?
They've right? tried that. They've tried, you know, "Let's Have a Sausage on the Barbie" for Christmas. It didn't really go too well. And the funny one is,
that's awesome.
Up until a few years ago, all we ever ate were hot turkeys and roast potatoes. And, you know, it's like 105 degrees outside and we're having roast turkey. Yeah. Suddenly we decided maybe that wasn't quite in tune with the local climate. And so seafood's become much more popular.
There you go.
We certainly have adjusted. And that's the funny part is, you know, when you have your Christmas decorations out, of course, it's not a Christmas decoration unless you've got some false snow around and some sort of, like,
is that right? So you have to do that fake snow stuff, huh?
Isn't that funny? I never really thought about that we align ourselves in the Southern Hemisphere so closely with snow and Christmas. And even though we're breaking out of that a little bit, as I said, it still works very...
That's kind of sad.
Young kids today would think of snow and Christmas.
It's kind of sad, actually.
But, yeah. Yeah. Desert and Christmas should be definitely our signpost.
All right. Well, listen, we have two people watching us on Facebook already. So I think we've doubled our audience from last week. And I think it's time that we get to the meat of the session tonight. You wrote an interesting post. You know, we've been doing these fairly provocative posts the last few weeks.
Yeah.
We're just trying to see if we can get ourselves in trouble. I think that's basically what this is about.
Yeah. But I would agree. I think, I mean, we had a good reaction to your post in regard to the internet last week. And this week, I think we both know the headline that I was assuming that we didn't quite use was, you know, let's stop going to keynotes that make us cry.
Yeah.
And I think that we both knew what we were saying in that. And the headline we put out was slightly different. But
well, it's coming. Just so you, it's coming out tomorrow because I left the night early to go up to Massachusetts and didn't get a chance to publish the post, which is, you know, highly unusual here at Modern Learners.
Well, I hope everyone realized.
Where everything runs like clockwork, like, right?
Absolutely.
The train, the posting train leaves the station at the minute every single week.
It's just podcasts every week, exactly the same time. That's why we have such a massive live audience on Facebook.
That's right. Because we're very predictable. We're very reliable. We're going to be there at the same. Yeah, no, we're obviously
not quite.
Yeah, not quite. But the post will be out tomorrow. But so go into that a little bit because I think we've had conversations about this in the past.
Yeah.
So what was the kind of.
Well, the beeline in the post was when I said, what should the professional learning be for learning professionals? And I was, you know, trying to reflect back on, again, one of those topics that we've just had a lot of discussion about throughout the year in Change School and in the last week, and particularly last week, in the book study we were doing with the alumni for Change School around assumptions.
Right.
And I was interested in the assumptions that we all make, I think. I think most of our readers, listeners, and whoever else make about the assumptions we make. And one of the assumptions is we're going to go to certain conferences and we're going to listen to certain keynotes. And often we're attracted to certain keynotes. And I think we're going to be both fairly discreet and not name people in this, but as a general comment, we go to certain conferences. And the best example for us in probably the last 10 years has been, say, we go to ISTE. And people go to ISTE, and usually what's the first thing they do when they're saying they're going to ISTE? Oh, such and such is a keynote, or this person's going to be great as a keynote. And I think it's rather intriguing that we make all these assumptions that, one, putting aside 4 or 5 days to go to a conference is a good idea. Two, that we'll always usually try and go to a few conferences, particular conferences every year. And three, probably more importantly, that somehow the conference keynotes are going to fire us up or are going to do something which is going to offer real value to our work. I'm not quite sure that's the case. I think that we need to review that assumption and ask ourselves why we're going to these events, what we expect from them, and whether in fact we are benefiting from some of these, might I say, highly paid speakers in these events.
Well, let's just say, you know, so I'm reminded here of Mount Vernon Presbyterian School,
yes,
which has five norms for learning in their classroom, one of which is assume the best. So with the caveat that we're starting, I don't think either one of us is saying that any particular speakers are not trying to do the best that they can.
Absolutely.
For the audience that they serve. In fact, I don't think either one of us is saying that every keynote should be the same. Yep. Or that there shouldn't be a real diversity or a wide variety. In fact, not so much from a content standpoint, but Diana Loffenberg actually tweeted out last week when she was keynoting a conference in Wisconsin, there were two female keynotes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's something that I think is great. And obviously we need more of that type of diversity, not just in gender, but in ethnicity and in experience and all that kind of stuff. But I think for me, and this goes back to what we talked about, I think it was in the last podcast, but I think that there's just an urgency now that we really need to spend just about every minute provoking people and pushing them in ways that make them think really hard about their value and the role of school and what our value is in this world today. Yep. And I think as much as some people want to entertain, I think we need to err on the side of maybe less entertainment and more pushing people's thinking and really getting them to consider very, very, very difficult questions that we need to be asking right now. So, and I think there's probably a way to do both, to be honest. And look, I'm not suggesting that I'm necessarily great at it, but I know that I think when most people ask me to come and speak, they know that I'm going to push really hard. You know that I'm not really trying to entertain them or pull them in emotionally I'm trying to get them to into an intellectual space where they're kind of, they start questioning things. So I think it's just but this goes back, it's not just about keynotes and conferences. It's about the conversation in general.
Absolutely.
That we're having. Yep. And how much I think both of us sometimes get frustrated, and other people too, by the way, it's not just the two of us, but other people get frustrated at the kind of surfacey conversation that we have about this, and our, I don't know if it's unwillingness or maybe it's our inability to take it really deep. And I think that's probably the bigger conversation than anything else.
Yeah. And I think it shows, I don't know what this shows, but if you think about it, a lot of the conversations we have, in addition to a lot of the speakers, but a lot of the conversations we have, too often I think they're about affirmation and celebration. You know, patting someone on the head and saying, wow, gee whiz, this is really good, this is really great. When there's a lot of that going on, where there isn't constructive reflection or conversation which is digging deeper into the rationale or the reasons behind why someone's doing something, or could they be doing it better, or were there better ways of thinking about a particular space. And I think, you know, at some level, I'm not, again, we're not saying that there isn't a role to pat someone on the head and say, you know, great job, we like your work, and, you know, celebrate that fact. But I think the bias is too much that way. I think too often people come away saying, you know, they make me feel really good. You know, I felt, you know, my work was worthwhile. I'm thinking, really and truly, you need someone to stand up and tell you that. I would have thought that the affirmation you get is from the response you see from the people you're working with, most notably your kids. You know when you're doing good work. And, you know, it's not just, you know, someone often says, you know, that old saying about, you know, if you give kids what they want, they'll want easy work. Well, I've never, ever seen that in my life. I find kids actually find sort of easy work boring, and they get distracted pretty quickly. Kids want to be challenged. They want intensity. They want rigor. And it's the same about our work. I mean, why should it be any different? So I think it's sort of interesting that I think we have slipped in letting a guard drop and assuming that, you know, it's almost more the higher profile an event or a speaker or any sort of professional learning is, the more people appear to have to value it. And as you said, I think what it should come down to is a lot of the value that we're now seeing is in conversations between people, for instance, that we're engaging with in Change School. So a lot of it matters at a much lower level, where it's between individuals. It's not necessarily at a conference. It's within a community. It's between people who can exchange ideas, challenge each other, and, you know, come out with solutions that they may not have thought of, or ideas or insights that weren't obvious to them in the first place. And rather than undermining you, it should challenge you and inspire you to actually move to those spaces.
And, you know, I mean, it's, I don't know how to put this. It's a challenging conversation to have, right? Because I do think that in many ways we're at a point, especially here in the States, where teachers need to hear that affirmation. They are beaten down.
Yep.
And they have tons of onerous expectations that are put on their backs without their consent, really, or without their approval.
Yep.
Just realities that they have to deal with coming from people in state houses that don't really know what they're talking about and doing stupid things like grading them on A through F.
Yep.
And, you know, we have cultures that are really focused on numbers and, you know, achieving that score. And that's not a, it's not a great, those aren't great conditions under which to teach.
No.
So, you know, I do think that in many places in the States and other places around the world too, that teachers feel put upon, and that they do need to hear that, you know, they are valued and that the work that they're doing is important. And so I don't mean to suggest that we disregard that. I think it's unfortunate, obviously, that we're in that state. I mean, I wish we were at a place where we didn't have to do that, you know, where it was
where teachers did feel valued, that they did feel like professionals, that they were paid for the work that they do in ways that, you know, gave them some respect, and so, that people in general respected them.
So do you think that we're too often letting our professional conversations be driven by those distractions? Do you think?
Yeah, I don't know. And, you know, I think, you know, I really don't like kind of constantly referring change school, but I mean, I think it's changed both of us too in the way we think about this.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, because like you said, I mean, the level of the conversations that we're engaged with now on a, like a daily basis are really high level, serious, you know, interesting things that people are really thinking about it at a deep level. So,
and
it kind of makes you pine for those conversations everywhere. Right. Yeah. And it helps you understand the potential of those conversations everywhere and how much so why don't you explain your metaphor of the, you know, the cold and hot, so that, you know, we can
sure.
talk about it in those terms.
I was just going to say also, we're not saying for one second that the reason these conversations are so vibrant and in this space is just because you and I are there. It's because we're providing a platform, a focus for people.
I think people are looking for space to have those conversations.
That's right. And so I often think about, you know, keynotes falling into one of those two categories. They're either cold shower or warm bath. And the warm baths are ones that, you know, are soothing and reward us and make us feel really good. The cold showers challenge us and make us walk away and think and reflect on whether, in fact, you know, there's something here we have to take note of. And I've always said that, and it always works for me. Maybe there are some in the middle of that, and it's funny how people are drawn to warm baths. We like to be with someone who's going to pat us on the back and tell us we're doing a good job and make us feel good. Whereas I think the cold showers aren't necessarily, well, very rarely, in fact, a cold shower doesn't mean someone's being critical of you. Someone's trying to undermine or subvert what you're doing. What they're simply doing is challenging you, asking questions that you might feel a bit uncomfortable about. And again, I'm not going to make names, but, you know, you and I know a couple of speakers who fit in that category. And one of those speakers, in fact, in the last 24 hours came back to me and said, you know, I got some feedback. People wanted to book me to do a workshop with a particular group of people, but they felt that I might challenge them too much. And I was really saddened by that. You know, that is really sad, because I can't think of anything better than sitting down with someone who's going to challenge my thinking about ideas, make me rethink some things that I've taken for granted in the past, some assumptions I've made that may be ill-founded. And I think that's the sort of, that's what I call professional conversations. They're the conversations that you're talking about that we're having in Change School. I love them. I love the fact that, you know, I was thinking, what have I learned the most this year for myself? Because as we're coming into this podcast, I was trying to put myself in that space too, not just talk about what I felt leaders were doing or could be doing. And for myself, the value of community is just staring me in the face. You know, it's community traditionally in the last few years has meant sort of an online community on the web. But as you know, with this technology we're using now with Zoom, you know, we talk to people. We talk to people as if they are in the room. And the value that you and I, that I've seen from the people who've been in those spaces and the growth that I've seen in them over that time as a result of those conversations, I think has been, for me, one of the biggest things that I've seen in the last few years.
So I agree with you, obviously. And it reinforces to me the importance of context. And I think that's where the real challenge is for people, because if they don't grapple with these contexts that we have, and Zoom is an example of a new context or a new technology that doesn't get us to face to face in the same way as physical space does, but it's a pretty close approximation in terms of your ability to really learn about people. Go deeply again into that. So if you don't have that experience, you don't really, your worldview doesn't really change that much. And again, I think that's, you know, so we're not going to ISTE this year.
No.
For a couple of reasons, but one of the reasons is that, it's not worth going to ISTE to just get your worldview basically, you know, affirmed, and to look at technologies that potentially have huge change making capabilities in classrooms, but to look at those technologies and just basically be saying, being told or being shown, yeah, you can do what you're currently doing better, you know? Yeah. And it's like, you don't really have to change that much, but now you can just digitize it. And now you can, you know, and so it's just, we're trying to find places where the push can come a little bit more with a little bit more, yeah, with a little more energy, and where people can find a space where, you know, they can be challenged like that and still engage in those conversations. And I really believe you can do that face-to-face physical space.
Yep.
So let me give you an example. And I'm not holding myself up here as a poster child, but so, last week, and I told you, I was in Texas and yep. I had a group of future ready superintendents, which was great. And I mean, it was a group of men and women, obviously, who had voluntarily engaged in these conversations, joined this group to kind of move forward and push themselves forward. And, you know, I came in there and I kind of just said, you're doing the wrong thing, right? You know, and I showed them, I used some language of theirs, and I tried to, you know, tried to just make them see that basically what's going on is that they're not really changing things at a very high level. They're just talking around it, you know? And I mean, I think that's as someone who is in that space, as you are, as so many other people are, speakers who are, you know, being asked to come in. I just believe that's what our role is yeah. to just say to people, look, you may think that what you're doing is good and you have the best intentions and we understand that, but let's push it. Let's really push it to the point where we get serious about thinking about who we are and what our value is.
And just a quick reminder that this episode of the Modern Learners podcast is being brought to you by Change School, where educational leaders get 8 weeks of intense immersion into the process of changing their schools and lifetime membership in a global community of change leaders seeking high bar, relevant, sustainable reimagination of their schools for the students they serve. Enrollment's now open for our fourth cohort, which starts in January, so head on over to change.school for all the details. And now, let's get back to our conversation.
It's interesting, isn't it? I was just thinking as you were saying that. So look at the parallel. I know at times we do this. Look at the parallel in the corporate sector. When people are asked to do a similar role within the corporate sector, usually their motivation is, do you want to make more profit? Do you want more revenue? You know, et cetera. And people aren't challenged by that question. They're actually, you know, obviously driven largely by that motivation. And so if someone comes in and says, well, you know, these are the things that I think you should be looking at, these are the things I'm going to challenge you on, they're less threatened by it because they can see an immediate outcome which responds to their need, which is profitability. In the education sector, it's not quite like that because, you know, the benefits of what we're talking about, the benefits of responding to the challenges that, for instance, you threw up last week, aren't as obvious. And I think that's partly the reason that people, attested by the notion of being challenged by speakers or in workshops. So I guess it's just something within the education sector that we have to start becoming more comfortable with. That we want to have conversations where we're going to be tested on our beliefs. We're going to be challenged on our assumptions, and that way we are going to move forward. I mean, if we continue to just look for affirmation and celebration, nothing's going to change. The world's going to stay right. Exactly the same. It is because we're really looking for someone to say, whatever you're doing now is a great job. And as you said, at no time is anyone saying it's with bad intent.
No.
It's always with the best of intent. People are doing the best they can. But as we often say, quoting Russell Ackoff and others, you know, they're doing the wrong thing right. And sometimes, you have to sit there and think very carefully about a speaker or a workshop leader who comes in and challenges those assumptions. So I think it's hopefully what, for us taking it away from the end of this year, from the reflection back on the work that we've done over the last 12 months and the work we've done in Change School, I think those who've been involved with us in that space and others, and hopefully a number of people listening to this podcast and who are reading our Modern Learners newsletters and Shifting Conversation posts, you know, we're in the same space as we are. We're not trying to say that everyone's, you know, has a journey to make. But I think it's important that we think carefully about our learning habits. You know, what are the habits we have about how we learn? And one of them is, I'm going to go to a conference, I'm going to listen to a keynote, I'm going to behave in this way. And I think we've got to reflect on our learning habits. And that's what I've been doing over the last week since I wrote that post, thinking about what are the habits that I have, and how do I maybe have to think about changing some of those as I move into the new year?
So I'm going to spring something on you that I read today. we didn't talk about this at all, but one of my favorite bloggers.
What do you mean we didn't talk about it? Well, this is totally unscripted. This podcast.
I just put the link in the chat in Zoom there, Bruce, gotcha. So you can take a look as we go here. But so John Hagel is someone who I really like a lot, and who wrote a book with John Seely Brown. What was it? I can't remember the name of it. It's really good book. And The Power of Pull is one, and there are a couple of others. But in this post that he
put up last week. And for our listeners and watchers, you'll post this with the podcast so people
can see. Yes, yes. I'll put the link down at the bottom. But this is a great, great post put up just a few days ago. And he says, the title of it is Never Underestimate the Immune System. And the first few lines are, every large and successful institution has an immune system, a collection of individuals who are prepared to mobilize at the slightest sign of any outside ideas or people in order to ensure that these foreign bodies are neutralized and that the existing institution survives intact and can continue on course. And, you know, I am obviously reminded of Seymour Papert, who talked similarly about this, you know, when schools were getting technologies, how they kind of treated them with an autoimmune response that basically pushed those computers out to the edges and never allowed technology to really get to the heart of what we do, because the institution would be changed writ large if that was the case. But here's what he says, and this is what I love, and this is what I want to talk just a little bit about. And it does fit the context of what we've been talking about already. He says, here's the paradox. Yeah. The immune system that has given large institutions extraordinary resilience in the past may be the very thing that makes these institutions so vulnerable today. In more stable times, institutional immune systems are very effective at keeping institutions focused and on course, resistant to the distractions that might lead to their downfall. But in more rapidly changing and volatile signs, this same immune system can become deadly by resisting the very changes that are required for the survival of the institution. I just love this post, and I'm going to read this probably four or five times. Yeah. And I'm sure we're going to probably use it down the road in a lot of ways in our future conversations. But look, this is the deal, right? We don't want that. We are not comfortable as an institution, not just in education, but institutions in general, but certainly in education, we are just not comfortable with that different narrative, with that different reality that forces us to examine or re-examine or reimagine, in our terms, the very nature of our work. And so we, I think, as practitioners and as professionals, because we are part of this institution, I don't think we just don't like being challenged at that level. Right. We don't like hearing that things are changing rapidly. We don't like the idea that we have to do a wholesale reimagination of our work. And that's why I think, you know, it's tougher to do that. It's easier to go and make people cry. You know, I mean, it's easier to pull them in emotionally. And again, I'm not saying that's a bad thing, but I just think we need to be pushing harder at this point because of what Hagel just wrote about there.
Yeah.
That if we don't, if we cater to our urge to conserve what we have, to conserve the status quo, in his words, it could be deadly, you know? And I think that's a pretty interesting way to put it, right?
Yeah, I think it's a really good way of putting it. And it is a brilliant post. I've only read it briefly while you were talking there, but it's stunning. And I was...
That fast? It's like 28 pages long here. <I'm just kidding. laughs> It's a long post. But there's a lot of good stuff. But anyway, go ahead.
Thank you. I was mindful of, and it's not a blatant and terrible plug for the book that I wrote last year, but you know, the title of the book was
The End of the School
As We Know It. And I'm rather amused by that phrase, the title of the book, because the minute, and whether I'm talking to an individual, a small group of people, or to a large audience or a workshop, the minute I say those words, the end of school as we know it, people almost rise up. They just get a little bit antsy. They go, oh, the old antibody starts working, and they immediately start pushing and pushing. And you sort of think, I didn't say it was the end of school. I said it was the end of school as we know it.
Right.
And it's sort of, and also, by the way, you should remember the song and a few other places where that came from. But
right.
I have found amusing and also a little bit interesting in the way people react just to that phrase, just to those words. And it absolutely endorses what Hegel's saying. Because then I've done this to open workshops, and I'm saying, I want to ask you a question. I want to ask you whether you think we are seeing the end of school as we know it. And I'm going to give you three choices. You believe we are seeing the end of school as we know it. You don't believe we're seeing the end of school as we know it. Or we are not seeing the end of school as we know it, and we should be. And it's a rather intriguing...
What do people say?
Pardon?
What do people say?
It's rather interesting because, of course, when they come back, the vast majority will go for the latter. And that is usually roughly about a half an audience will say, we are not seeing the end of school as we know it, but we should be. And what happens is that immediately back up, you know, antibody type reaction, when they have a chance to reflect on those three choices, they start to think about, interesting. You still get people who are going to defend, you know, their existing practice, the existing school model, and you get people who just outright say, yes, we are. And those are people, I think, who represent that tiny, tiny group who, when you start talking about change within schools, are resistant to it, you know, just accept that we're going to see the end of school, that even as a social institution within society, school as we know it is not going to exist in the future. And that's really sad because neither you nor I or anything we've ever done Modern Learners or Change School has ever said it's the end of the institution, because it's such a key part of our lives, of society, of the social makeup of our society. That's not what we're saying. What we are saying is maybe it's about time, you know, we started reflecting on what that model looks like.
Well, the good news is Stephen Will, who's watching us on Facebook, says, I agree. So there you go. He says, school's immune system culture could be our doom. And thank you very much, Stephen. And Karen from Gladstone in Queensland, thanks so much for watching. And I'm glad your 10-year-old son is using his Lego designer. That's great.
Fantastic.
Seriously, that's fantastic.
That's cool.
And it is, you know, it's like, there's two questions that popped up to me when you were talking about that. And the first one is, could this be the end of school as we know it? I mean, meaning, are these changes happening in a way that make school unsustainable?
Yep.
In its current iteration?
Yep.
And I think that that's an interesting question, to be honest with you. And I think when you look outside of the kind of traditional spaces that we have for schools and the way we kind of think about them right now, there are lots of people who are iterating in the making school different space, right? Yep. Unfortunately, it's not, well, depends on the model, but it's not scaling, and it's struggling, you know, that kind of change. But it's not just could this be, the harder question is should this be?
Yep.
Should this be the end of school as we know it?
Yep.
And, you know, I sound like a broken record, I know, and you know, people who have been listening to these podcasts are probably getting sick of saying stuff like this, but I am stunned by how many things we do that we know aren't best for kids, yeah, and that we readily acknowledge when they're brought up and put up on the table, but that we are still unable to change.
Yeah.
It's just stunning.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, not everybody, but most people, if they are able even to take a 6-inch step back from their experience of school and look at it with even 6 inches of objectivity, they kind of go, why are we doing that? And why are we doing that? And what sense does that make?
Yeah.
But yet, you know what? It's just, yeah, but we just gotta, let's try to make it better. And that Acuff quote again, I mean, we say this every week. We should just call the podcast. This is what we should call the podcast now. We're doing the wrong thing right. Right. That's what we should just title the podcast. Because yeah, we keep saying that week after week after week. But I mean, so kind of circling it back around, I mean, and that gets back to, that's what conferences should be about.
Yeah.
I mean, if you know, you and I have talked a lot about putting together a conference, and maybe at some point we will, right? I can guarantee you if we do, it will only be for the faint of heart, right? It will not be for the faint of heart. Because you'll have to take a stress test as a requirement to come to the conference, right?
And I know it seems like
we'll be handing out Xanax at the door.
And I know we're giving ISTE a bit of a belting, and there are, you know, that's fine, really. ISTE's a big boy. It can
ISTE's ISTE.
But the point about ISTE and similar events is that they are built around this premise that technology has a significant role to play in schools today. And the great thing for most people about that statement, that technology does have that role, is that it's non-threatening. That for many years, people actually thought this was the big change. This was subversion. This was undermining existing practice. But of course, the immune system's been working incredibly well. The antibodies have done a great job of appropriating the technology and ensuring that in many cases, too often, it has not changed a thing other than the medium in which our kids are working. And so it really serves dual purpose. It makes people feel that they are committed to some form of change to make the school model more relevant today because it now has technology in it. And at the same time, it doesn't threaten them in the process.
Yep. And that's the problem.
Absolutely.
I think we have to feel threatened. And yep. But the key is uncomfortable, right? But the key is you have to be in a culture that embraces that and supports that. You know, it's hard feeling threatened in isolation, obviously. That's not to say it's easy feeling threatened ever, but if you're trying to work through it with some other people who are kind of in the same boat.
Yep.
I think that's a much better place to be. So go ahead.
So I think, you know, for me, I think, you know, for everyone, I think one of the things that we probably have to try and do is we move to the end of this year and moving into next year is, you know, stop focusing our professional conversations around the distractions. You know, I know they're there. We both admit it. We're not trying to be glib. We're not trying to, overlook the fact that there is a lot of requirements and compliance that various systems are, you know, put upon our schools, put upon our teachers, put upon our school leaders. But let's stop focusing on those distractions and let's focus on the things that really matter. The time that we have for professional learning, I think, is most importantly needs to be focused on the things that are important to our kids. And that means, therefore, we don't have the time to focus on the distractions that in the past have consumed way too much of our energy.
And I would only end that by saying that we have to make sure that we have some conversations about the things that are important for our kids.
Absolutely.
Because right now, I think there are a lot of kind of diverse opinions on that. And there's a lot of capacity building that needs to be done around that, and some pretty difficult conversations that have to occur to kind of bring everyone to that kind of point in thinking about it. Yep. Well, interesting conversation as always, Bruce. I gotta say, I'm not sure if we're gonna do one more before the end of the year. Maybe we'll try to squeeze one more in at some random point.
Next 7 days. No, on the dot, like exactly.
Yes, I know. I know that I'm not gonna divulge the name, but I've, as you know, gotten in touch with somebody who I've been trying to get in touch with for a long time to do a podcast, and I'm really, really looking forward to
that. Yeah, that'd be cool if you can pull that off.
It will be really good.
Yep.
And we are going to pull it off, so that'll be great. And then not, again, just to circle back around to the fact that Change School enrollment for Cohort 4 is open right now. If you guys are still listening, we would love to have you join us. We have 5 people on Facebook right now. This is like, it's crazy. It's crazy. It's
unbelievable.
I mean, the Nielsen ratings here in the States are going through the roof. go to change.school and check it out. And because you're listening, you can use the discount code 500OFF and you will reap significant savings if you decide to join us for January. We're up, I think we're about 20% of the way to our goal already, which is really great. And I know that a lot of that is probably going to happen after the holidays are through. Changeleaders.community as well is a place where we had some great conversations the other night again. And we will be revisiting this conversation with a little bit more later this week in at changeleaders.community if you want to join us there as well. But lots of stuff going on, and it's getting to be a really busy time of the year. And so we'll have to kind of play this by ear. But as always, Bruce, great having a conversation with you. Looking forward to another one here in the real near future. And send me pictures of Santa Claus out on the beach, okay? Because that's what we all pine for here in the States.
Lying on the tail, getting a tan. Okay, right.
Are the reindeers? I mean, do they have like reindeer on Bondi Beach or something?
We don't have kangaroos.
On surfboards. Six
white boomers is the local.
Surfboards, the whole deal.
It doesn't have the same feel, I know.
No, it's just not the same.
Okay, mate. Good talking.
Cheers,
to you.
Mate. Cheers. Mate.